This is Only a Game. I'm Karen Given. Just a couple hundred people hear their names called in the NFL draft every year. Far fewer become astronauts. Exactly one person has done both. But growing up in a working-class African-American family in 1960s Virginia, Leland Melvin never imagined he would make history. Reporter Tal Pinchevsky shares his journey.
Four forward, drifting to the right a little. Ready? Down a half. 30 seconds.
Leland Melvin was 5 years old when the Apollo 11 spaceflight landed Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin on the moon and into history.
We copy you down, Eagle.
He remembers adjusting the antenna on a Sylvania black and white television so that his family could witness the historic moment.
So the next day, all my friends were saying, hey, you know, do you want to be an astronaut? We have Neil and Buzz walked on the moon, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. And I said, no, I don't want to be an astronaut, because I saw these guys in crew cuts and they were military, and I didn't think that I would want to do something like that. I didn't see someone who looked like me either. I grew up in a small southern town in Lynchburg, Virginia, and most of the people that I knew were, you know, African Americans, were school teachers, because that was kind of the highest position that you could get. I didn't know of any bankers or lawyers or people like that. It's one of those things where, you know, you kind of know your place. You know, you would watch the television, you would see buses are getting firebombed, and you'd see these, you know, these things happening to people that look like you. So you know that, you know, you can't just do everything that anyone else can do. You have to make sure that you're treading, I'm not going to say lightly, but treading in a way that's not going to disrupt the apple cart and will take not only you out, but maybe take even your family out or your community out.
Growing up, Leland loved playing with Tinker Toys and blocks. He liked building things. And when he was 8 years old, he got his hands on a new source of fun.
Yeah, my mother had the, I guess, wherewithal or misfortune in buying me an age-inappropriate, non-OSHA certified chemistry set. She said, follow the instructions, and I threw the instructions over my shoulder, and I proceeded to mix these two dissimilar chemicals together that created the most incredible explosion in her living room. And I just remember it getting on the rug and the rug burning. And I was like, wow, look at this. Smoke, fire, and brimstone right here from these two little beakers. And I was like blown away. I was actually blown back and there was smoke. But if you looked at my eyes, my brain was activated. You could see my eyes as wide open as possible. And my parents didn't make much money. So this is like, you don't do that. You don't mess up the sofa and you don't mess up the rug. But it didn't matter to me, because I knew all I needed was a lab coat and goggles and I could be a chemistry major or a scientist.
Leland's interest in science and engineering skyrocketed. In high school, he attended a special engineering program at the University of Virginia that specifically targeted minority students. He collected old bicycle parts and used them to build his own personalized bike. He helped his father refurbish an old bread truck into a family camper, complete with a stove and flip-down bunk beds. He had always been an athlete. He started playing football at age 7 and grew up idolizing another Virginian, tennis legend Arthur Ashe. But he thought science would shape his future, until one big play during the homecoming game in his senior year of high school.
I was running down the sideline, Stan Hull threw this perfect spiral into the corner of the end zone, and the ball is coming. I can see this whole thing playing out. The ball is coming into my hands. I looked into the stands a little bit, heard the crowd screaming, knew that I was going to be winning this game by catching this ball, and I dropped it in the end zone. And I felt about the size of a gnat. And I walked to the sideline. My coach, Jimmy Green, grabbed my face mask, looked me in the eyes, and he says, Leland, I believe in you. Get back out there and catch the ball this time. Run the same play. Catch the ball. And I was so embarrassed because my friends and family were there, and I just wanted to sit down and go away. But running down the sideline second time, I could read Spalding on the ball as it came into my hands, and we won the game. Unbeknownst to me, there was a scout by the name of Morgan Hout from the University of Richmond who was watching the first mishap in the end zone. He started walking out of the stadium. He heard the crowd screaming the second time. And he came back and saw me doing a little dance in the end zone. And he said to himself, he said, this guy, he failed horrifically, but he didn't give up. And that one catch resulted in a $180,000 scholarship to the University of Richmond.
In Leland's first season for the Spiders, Richmond went winless. But Leland developed into a standout wide receiver, establishing school records for career receptions and receiving yards. He became a two-time honorable mention All-American. The Detroit Lions selected him in the 11th round of the 1986 NFL draft, but then cut him after he was slowed by a hamstring injury during training camp. Leland started pursuing a graduate degree in material science engineering at the University of Virginia, but before the 1987 NFL season, he got an invitation to Dallas Cowboys training camp. Leland didn't put his studies on hold.
So before online learning became a thing, they were videotaping VHS videotapes of math for material science and electrochemistry that they sent to Valley Ranch for me to watch after catching footballs during the day for America's team. That was the hardest job I've ever had, to train to be a professional football player and go to grad school at the same time. And grad school as in material science engineering. And in the evenings, a lot of my colleagues were like, hey, let's go out to a club or let's go do this. I'm like, no, I got to watch material science engineering videotapes. So I was Larry Lab, or the nerd. They call me the nerd guy.
During a routine passing drill with Dallas quarterback Danny White, things suddenly changed for Larry Lab.
We were planning to throw a half-speed 10-yard out, and he did an audible when he saw Tom Landry walking on the field.
Tom Landry was a future Hall of Fame coach, and White saw an opportunity to impress the football icon. He told Leland to run as far and as fast as he could.
So I went for it, pulled my hamstring, but I thank Danny White for helping me get the space. Because if it hadn't been for that, possibly, who knows where I would have been.
Leland's NFL career was over. He went back to grad school full-time, finished his master's degree in material science engineering, and, as Leland jokes, did what many former NFL players do. He went to work for NASA. He started in 1989 as an engineer at Langley Research Center, making optical fiber sensors. By 1998, he began astronaut training at Johnson Space Center. He appeared to be on the fast track to space, but then...
April 2001, I was training to do something called a spacewalk, which is really more like a space crawl because you're pulling yourself around with your hands and you're not walking, you're floating, doing things like assembling the International Space Station. And my training of this, to train to simulate this on the ground, is in a 5-million-gallon pool that's called the Neutral Buoyancy Laboratory. And I was in this suit that's a cross between the Michelin Man and a Pillsbury Doughboy, going down 32 feet in the water, and we're actually, you know, going to be training on submerged space stations and space shuttles to simulate what we would do on our missions.
As he descended into the pool, Leland had trouble hearing his instructor. Soon he was hearing nothing but static. When he was pulled from the pool and his helmet was removed, it quickly became clear that something was wrong.
The flight surgeon started walking towards me, and he was just moving his lips, and I thought he was just playing with me. And I said, this is serious. Why is he playing with me? But when he touched my ear and pulled his finger back, I felt this river of blood rolling down the side of my face. I was completely deaf. After emergency surgery in the hospital, the world-renowned ear, nose, and throat doctors said that, you know, they don't know what happened to me and that I would never fly in space.
Unbeknownst to Leland, his suit had been missing its Valsalva pad, a small styrofoam insert that helps astronauts equalize the extreme pressure that can build up in their ears. About 3 weeks after the accident, Leland's hearing returned to his right ear, but damage to his left ear remained. His dream of orbiting planet Earth appeared to be over. Leland shifted his focus at NASA. He worked on robotics and joined an educator's program in which he traveled across the country, encouraging children to nominate their teachers to become astronauts.
And I'm working in this job, and we're going around the country getting kids to nominate their teachers to become astronauts. And one of the kids says, hey, have you flown in space yet? I said, no. And he says, well, you're not an astronaut. Astronauts fly in space. And I'm like, kid, shut up. I'm just like getting, you know, not angry, but I'm thinking, will I ever fly in space?
Leland was still working with kids and teachers on February 1st, 2003, the day the space shuttle Columbia was scheduled to return from its 28th mission in space.
When you're landing, there's a countdown clock to where the wheels should touch down on the runway in Florida. Well, I get a phone call from my education boss, and she's new to NASA, and she says to me, she says, Leland, what does it mean when the countdown clock is now counting up? And I said, how much is it counting up? And she said, 20 seconds, 30 seconds, 40 seconds, a minute. I did an illegal U-turn on Highway 66 outside of D.C. and turned back to NASA because I knew that all of my friends were gone.
A catastrophe in the sky.
Columbia's last communication was received at about 8 a.m. Central Time as Columbia flew 200,000 feet above North Central Texas.
We are seeing huge pieces of metal re-entering the Earth's atmosphere.
All seven Columbia crew members died, including David M. Brown, one of Leland Melvin's close friends.
And that night I went to David Brown's parents' home in Washington, Virginia, to console them. And when I got there, David's father said something so powerful to me. He said, we must honor the legacy of my son and the crew who gave their lives for our civilization, for humanity, for doing these incredible, incredible feats. And I thought that, you know, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to honor them if I'm medically disqualified to fly. And we went to the different memorial services around the country, and the chief of all the flight surgeons, as we were taking off and landing in the NASA airplane, the chief of all the flight surgeons was sitting beside me on every takeoff and landing, and he watched me clear my ears on descent.
At the time, Leland was getting ready to move from Washington to Houston to continue his life as a non-flying astronaut. But as the chief flight surgeon watched Leland clear his ears to combat the cabin pressure on these flights, he saw an opportunity to resuscitate the Earthbound astronauts' dreams of spaceflight.
Rich Williams said, come in my office, and he gave me this waiver to fly in space, even though my hearing had not changed significantly. He felt like if I could effectively clear my ears, then there'd be no reason why I shouldn't be able to fly in space. He believed in me. You know, I got this get-out-of-jail-free card. I head back to Houston, and soon after that, I get assigned to a mission.
Leland Melvin went on to participate in two missions to the International Space Station. His Detroit Lions jersey, which he brought with him into space, is now exhibited at the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. He's been an NFL player and an astronaut. But more than anything, Leland has become an advocate for what is possible.
I'll never forget when I first became an astronaut, when I was on a fire truck driving down the boulevards in Houston, celebrating John Glenn's return to flight on the space shuttle. And a brand new, spanking new astronaut, 1998, driving down the road. And these two little black boys are standing with their father in their orange spacesuits. And their father points up to the fire truck and is basically saying, look at that guy. And when we make eye contact, it was almost how as though these kids had this rocket fuel going through their veins and they were about to launch off of that street because they saw me and they saw the possibilities of them doing what they wanted to do as being astronauts. So that was my first eye-opening moment that said, okay, this does matter, and that what you're doing, people are watching.
That story came from reporter Tal Pinchevsky. Leland Melvin has written a book. It's called Chasing Space, an astronaut's story of grit, grace, and second chances. We'll have a link to it and to Leland's personal website at onlyagame.org.